The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here with two of my favorite people in the market, my pair of Lisas, Lisa DeLuca of where now?
Veritas.
And Lisa DeZuti of Market Connections. Welcome, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
Glad to be here.
Great to have us.
That would be good. So, Ms. DeLuca, have you been on the show before? Once a long time ago?
No. First time?
My mistake.
First time recorder.
God, I hate when that happens. But at least you're here now, so I've made up for part of it. That means you'll be back. So tell people who you are, what you do, and give us a little background. Tell them where we met.
I don't remember where we met.
White.
Oh, E. James White. Oh, my God. That was eons ago.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. So I hate to say how long that's been. But
a few weeks.
I'm Lisa DeLuca. I am the public sector marketing senior manager at Veritas and have healthcare, state and local, education, and federal.
There you go.
Yeah.
And
been doing this a long time.
We also, the E. James White thing, I forget which client we were both, I guess, pitching, or I was working with somebody in
PRC.
Oh, back in the
when
super
they were
mini
still
days.
Around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
That was a few weeks ago. And then we actually got to work together for 3 years at
CDWG. That's right.
Yeah, which was a total blast.
Wow. Memory lane.
That's right.
Yeah, well, we go back. We go back.
Yes, we do.
So tell people why.
Yes. I'm Lisa DeZuti. I'm president and CEO of Market Connections. We're a full service custom research firm that specializes in public sector. And prior to founding Market Connections, which was 21 years ago, hard to believe.
Nice.
I was at GTSI, and that's where you and I met, Mark.
Yep.
I mean, you were helping us with a lot of our direct mail, direct marketing programs back then. And I've known Lisa DeLuca almost that long. I had left GTSI. I think I'd been out for about a year with Market Connections, and she was doing some ad testing and had me come back in and run a set of employee focus groups. So that's how you and I met. So, yeah, a few weeks have gone by.
That's right.
Just a little bit of time. So what this show is going to focus on content and its role in the government market. And Market Connections just published its latest federal marketing content study. So you can find that if you want to follow along at home. You can find that at federalcontentmarketing.com or at the marketconnectionsinc.com website. I'd suggest you find it at the marketconnectionsinc.com website because you can download a lot of other reports too.
Yeah.
You have to pay for the full thing, but you can download the executive overview, which has a ton of really great stuff in it. And, you've seen it in my articles in Awash Tech. Lisa and I've talked about it before. You'll see it in my next book, Government Marketing Best Practices 2020.
Coming
out
soon.
Yeah. Yes. Lisa DeLuca. We're going to be Lisa D. I can't say Lisa
can't
D because they're both.
Or D E.
Yeah. So, DeLuca and DeZuti. I'm just going to use your last name.
There you go.
Because everybody uses my last name. DeLuca, go back to our FedTech days. I was brought in to help Jim Shanks and his team, you and Anne-Marie and everybody else, Mad Max, help grow that business in the federal sector in particular by kibitzing programs. And one of the programs I got to play in a little deeper than the kibitz was FedTech Magazine.
Right. FedTech Magazine was started at CDW to allow for us to get case studies, believe it or not, that our customers were happy to participate in. And by leveraging a third party to execute the magazine, it then took a life of its own and became quite a big content piece for CDW to promote not only CDW solutions, but what our customers were actually doing with them. And I thought at the time, it was a huge undertaking trying to step away from our traditional catalog business and do something different. And it ended up being one of the best things that ever happened to the company.
It won a Best IT Magazine Award in the end of the first year.
Right.
Not for House Organ, but for Best IT Magazine, period.
Right.
Because it was not selling. The biggest issue, two big issues I had with it. Number one, CDW wanted a huge CDW in the upper left-hand corner. And I went to the mat with Shanks, and Shanks went upstairs, and we got a little CDW in the bottom right-hand corner, because otherwise it would look like the catalog.
Right. We wanted to keep the integrity of the book together.
Yeah. So. The other thing that I went to the mat on there, and I went to you and Aunt Marie about this, when I saw the editorial calendar that was proposed, the original editorial calendar, this is 2004, the first issue was going to focus on the 90s acronym soup reform programs for all of the, FASA, FARA, ITMRA, you know, all of the, 10-year-old crap. And I'm going, no, why? This is boring. This is old. So you guys agreed. So I went to Lee, and then we went to Jim and said, go, Crin. And it was a perfect venue for the case studies. Did you see the publication now, right?
Absolutely. And I remember working on some focus groups where we were testing different versions of it and against the catalog, because back then it was a big decision.
Right. And
I was always impressed in with that publication, because it was seen as a credible publication. It was not necessarily, the first thought was not CDW, which benefited CDW in the long run. And even the research study we're going to talk about today, unbranded content is more valuable. And so that was viewed as an unbranded piece.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
You guys were ahead of your time.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Well, we have an emulator recently, and I don't know if it was consciously emulated or not, but GovTechWorks from GDIT is following the exact same path. Mm-hmm. Nothing about GDIT in the publication, but case study after case study, valuable information written by and FedTech magazine now. Vanessa's there.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a full Vanessa Jo Roberts is who we're talking about, former editor of Government Computer News or associate editor of GCN. But what you do is you staff it with real reporters.
Right.
So, and Tobias Nagel is the editor of GovTechWorks.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's great stuff. I love this stuff. It's so cool. So, DeZuti.
Yes.
tell us about the study overview, quick.
Yeah, it was the second time we've conducted the content marketing review. The first time was in 2015. We skipped a year, decided to repeat it this year out of usually what drives our off-the-shelf studies is client demand, market demand, people asking us for it. So we repeated it this year with a little bit of a twist, where we tried to focus some of the questions on how content is consumed, what's consumed during the buying process. And so we did 200 interviews with government and 150 with contractors. So got a pretty good sample.
Okay. Now, how do you guys over at Veritas use content at present?
Content for us is not content for content's sake anymore. Content has to have a purpose in terms of lead generating for us.
Sure.
So it's
That's
all
valid.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of the way of the world these days. And, we use our content, I'd say, primarily for persuasion, right? And persuading them to look at more content from us or persuading them to make a decision or another step in their process towards Veritas. And however we can do that, whether it's a white paper, whether it's a small demo, whether it's driving people to take an action by reading a top 10 list, you know, the top 10 reasons you need to migrate to the cloud or whatever the piece is, it has to have a purpose and then it has to have a secondary purpose. What follows behind that piece that's going to keep that customer on the hook, right, to come to Veritas for their solutions?
See, my content's always been driven by, isn't this cool? Won't you read my next one?
Yeah. And for us at Market Connections, I mean, content is valuable in keeping our awareness up in the market, keeping us top of mind as, you know, the leader in terms of public sector research.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's valuable for us in that way. We, too, also use it for lead generation to get new prospects, you know, to raise their hand and say they're interested in what we're offering. But we also use it as a relationship builder with our current clients. So we will go in, for example, and do a private briefing of this, of the Federal Content Marketing Review, with our existing clients. So it has value there. So we really try to spread the value across a lot of different aspects of the business.
So you're going to use it to help clients develop a deeper content strategy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool.
We do like a half day, mm-hmm. 2 hours to a half day session with clients.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AM Tower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with my pair of Elises after this message. Welcome back to AM Tower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here with Lisa DeLuca of Veritas, Lisa DeZutti of Market Connections. You can find the study that we're basing this conversation about content on at marketconnectionsinc.com or federalcontentmarketing.com. But go to marketconnectionsinc.com because there's other reports there. The Federal Media and Marketing Study, the previous content study. See how it's evolved. This is an ever-changing universe, and you have to understand the nuances of where it was 2 years ago, where it is now. Don't try to anticipate where it's going in 2 years. Just understand where it is now. We have no clue where it's going to be in 2 years or what the delivery vehicles are going to be in 2 years. But, you know, content is used as an influencer throughout the procurement process. That's a significant part of this study. But DeLuca, tell us in any way you want how you use content to lead people down the path of deciding Veritas.
Well, first I'll say we're very fortunate as marketers in this space to have this study. It's nice to have somebody actually cover what we need to know and what we need to learn from. And what's different this year, I think, in this study is you're seeing an acceleration of need for getting to the point of what it is your product set offers your customers, because they're smarter. They're coming in already educated. They've already done homework, right, before they even hit your website. And once they're there, they want to get to the point. And so you're seeing things rise to the top now that weren't necessarily there before, where we thought, you know, thought leadership kind of let them in. Now what's happening is they'd much rather see short product demos. They'd much rather see the white papers front and center. They'd much rather see case studies up front. And you're already talking about those that are starting to evaluate the vendors they want to choose from. So I think vendors need to realize that the customer is coming in a lot smarter and a lot more ready to dig deep into your content before they even get to your page.
Yeah, I agree with everything that Lisa said. And I think even to back up, this study that we did focused on the procurement process, but content, you know, as an influencer begins long before they ever get to, oh, I have a need, let me start thinking about a procurement. I mean, content can be, good content can be a door opener for your BD folks. It changes conversations. We've heard that from clients when they sit down in front of a government decision maker and they have a good white paper or a good infographic or a good case study, whatever that might be. It changes the body language with that person across the table. It puts you in that position of being a value-added partner, an educator. You're no longer a vendor. So I think even before you get to the procurement phase, content is really valuable as being a door opener, a conversation starter, an engager.
Yeah.
And it changes too. Like when they're evaluating, you know, they still are interested in your marketing material. So when you have a solution brief or product brief that you've put together, that's when that comes into play, is up front. They're interested in white papers and demos at that point and research, but research for purposes of evaluating your products, such as the Gartner Magic Quadrant. You know, if you don't play there and you're a technology provider, you really kind of want to consider that, because that's kind of the gold standard for them.
Right.
And then you get down into the RFI, RFP, part of the process, and you're talking more about the case studies and, you know, what they've done in past performance. And that's where that starts to come into play. And you have to be smart about how you deliver that.
Yeah, I think of both of those stages, as you mentioned, Lisa, those two stages, earlier stages, are kind of compressing. And you're seeing, they're still in both those stages. They're consuming a lot of information. They want details. They want meat. They don't want fluff at that point. So I think that's why in the study, the white papers, the research reports scored so highly in those early stages. Now, when you get down in the bottom stages of the funnel where decisions are actually being made, as Lisa said, that's when you see the demos and trials and things like that become much more important to the federal decision makers.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to add, you know, in the study, some of the things that we're all familiar with, video, infographics, blogs, ebooks, they didn't score as high in terms of useful content in determining needs and shaping the RFP. But back to my point, I think it's because the question asked about the buying process, those tools are important before.
Overall.
Yes, yeah. when you're engaging them and you're making them aware. So I think they still have value, but it's at an earlier stage.
Yeah. You know, government marketing best practices came out 12 years ago now. And as you both know, it was not the deepest study ever produced on the government market, but it was the first one really ever that dealt with public sector marketing. And it was the best business card I ever had.
Right.
You know, because there was juicy stuff in there. But one of the things that I didn't see here, it's kind of implied, but I'd like some feedback from both of you. The author of the piece, the white paper, the case study, whatever, if it's a subject matter expert, does that add legitimacy? And if they're Lee Fredrickson would call a visible expert, does that help even more? I mean, you're not going to get Ron Ross to write you a piece for your company on security, because he's a federal employee. He happens to be one of the best known people in security, but you know, he's not going to do your piece. But if you have an internal person, what kind of value can that add?
You want your subject matter expert to be closest to the buyer in terms of, you understand me and you know what I need. So some of your sisters and systems engineers with the certifications that your customers also have, you know, become important to you. And you can't underestimate the value of those that are in the field every day with your customers being also your content providers. We also actually leverage analysts at the research organizations such as Forrester or IDC, and they're helpful in like putting into play a topic. So for us, it's right now 360 data management, looking at your data from all angles and what you're trying to get out of it. And putting that in front of an analyst and having them sort of talk about the value of that approach, and then you being able to deliver your content inside of that kind of a report has a lot more power than doing that direct.
Okay, but it's not an overt endorsement of Veritas. It's an overall endorsement of the process.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know that I have much more to add. I mean, I agree with that. I think as long as you have some sort of third-party independent content or piece of what you're producing, it's very valuable, to, as Lisa said, to have your internal SME who's closest to the customer. Some of the most successful webinars that we've done for clients have been a fireside chat between one of our research directors and the client SME. Just, you know, back and forth discussing the research in a very conversational way on that webinar. And the phone starts to ring at our client site, you know, before the webinar is ever done. So there is definitely power in that. But I think it has to be married with some sort of independent data piece versus a client writing their own white paper with no source of independence whatsoever.
Right. Okay. I couldn't do that through like my PR team, right? And have them create a study. It may be disruptive. It may come up with some interesting answers, but it's not with methodology and validation that comes from that independent third party. And for us, a lot of times that is using somebody like Market Connections to develop the study and deliver it for us.
Sure. So, the webinar that you did on that, was that repurposed at all? Was there too much graphics to turn it into a podcast, or could you have turned it into a video and done the YouTube gig?
Absolutely. It was done all of the above.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we've developed, even working with Lisa and her team, we've developed research that was delivered in that fashion. But then you can also go in and pull out piece parts of your study and develop op-ed articles that you can deliver to the publications and get published, you know, that way and get your content out there for free.
Yeah.
And you can also create blogs from that same material and deliver that and keep it going, right? And then you got to look at things like getting that out on social media so that you start to impact those user groups and so forth out there that's what they want to see.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying Lisa DeLuca does a great job of that. I don't see that happen with all of our clients. Sometimes they make an investment in thought leadership and then they forget about the PR side of it. And right. There's just so much you can do with it to leverage it across 6 to 12 months even. From
having
one
content
investment.
And putting it in the back room and not sharing it's not the brightest approach.
Yeah.
So
got to use the heck out of it, right? Things aren't cheap these days,
absolutely.
And you want to make sure you make the most of
your
value.
There's so many delivery vehicles out there.
Yes.
You know, there's 2 million, 3 million LinkedIn groups, a couple of hundred focused on GovCon. They're, you know, on the technology side, I can't think of a technology that I can't find a LinkedIn group for.
Right.
You name it, it's there.
Yeah. And even associations, you know, we made sure when we built our LinkedIn group distribution list, we made sure we had our associations included in that. And that was the smartest thing we could have done. Just by posting to the association LinkedIn group, they picked us up in their publication.
Yeah, you got great pickup.
And that publication then was distributed to their entire membership. So,
how cool was that?
Yeah, so you don't underestimate the value of those groups and what they're focused on.
You know, it's a force multiplier like nothing we had back in the GTSI days
That's right. CDW days.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, had we had either, you know, one of my promises to Jim Shanks was taking CDW over GTSI, which seemed like quite a task at that time. Actually, it wasn't, but there was a lot of reasons for that, including the marketing team at CDW working directly with Mad Max and the sales team, which was something I don't think happened on a regular basis at GTSI. But, you know, if we had had force multipliers like this, then it'd be radically different universe.
Right.
So anyway, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Lisa DeLuca, Veritas, Lisa Tizzuti, Market Connections. Come back. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. If you can't tell, I'm here with two very good friends. And, you know, we could tell stories, but then we'd have to redact a lot of stuff here.
Or we'd have to extend the program for a couple
well,
of hours.
Well, both,
right?
Yeah. But this is the second time this study has come out, correct?
Yes.
So, and you had the same bullets in the first one, but it's altered slightly. Types of content preferred by feds versus contractors?
And surprise, there were a few differences. So we asked what the federal decision makers valued in terms of types of content, and we asked contractors what they thought federal decision makers valued the most. So when you look at the results for the feds, research reports was number one, topping the list. That was number four for contractors. Contractors valued their own marketing collateral.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
There's gambling at risk.
And that was number four on the Fed's list. So pretty big gap there between number one in terms of research reports, and that was much lower down on the list for contractors. Webinars were more valued by contractors during the shaping of that RFI-RFP stage. Research reports still more valued by feds during during all stages than they were valued by contractors. Research reports tended to fall lower on the lists when we were asking contractors what they thought was most valuable. So a little bit of a gap there. I think something important for contractors to pay attention to. The feds tend to value unbranded content more than they do the contractor's own marketing collateral. Not that it isn't important, not that it doesn't have its place, but you have to put it in perspective.
Yeah, and I think that goes along with, you know, you may have something really valuable to say, but you got to validate it.
Yeah.
And so you got to go to that third party to do that. And, you know, I thought it was interesting this year too, Lisa, that thought leadership for the contractor side of the house, you know, jumped to the top.
Yes.
We like to think our thought leadership is really making an impact on our customers. But when you're truly talking about the buying process, all they want to do is get to the nuts and bolts, right, and get to what's going to have them get a decision through. So that was kind of eye-opening this year for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us saw some changes I think we're going to all have to make to our plans to accommodate our customers and make sure that we're delivering what they're going to come back for.
Yeah, and seeing these differences between what the government values and what contractors think they value is not the first time that we've seen that in this study. It happens a lot, and the lesson is, as a contractor, you can't assume that you know what your government customer wants. You have to ask, you have to listen, you have to act.
And we do that. I mean, I've been at trade shows and had a conversation where I felt like I was engaged enough with the customer to say, can I ask you a question? You know, is this really going to be something valuable you'll take back and leverage at your point of business? Or is there something else you'd like to see from me?
Right.
And you'd be surprised the answers you get. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with what you thought.
That's right.
And so I think being in touch with the customers and getting out with them, whether it's with your sales teams and going on calls and just listening to them,
mm-hmm.
or if it's actually going and asking at a trade show, mm-hmm. you know, get a customer to the table and start to ask them about the marketing.
All of the above.
Right.
Right. All of the above.
Okay. So there's some discrepancy, and gee, I'm shocked, between what the feds want and what contractors want to force feed them.
Correct. Yes.
And but here's, you know, the cool thing. The contractors that actually get it get real traction out of providing useful information.
Absolutely.
You do.
And you know, it can make the difference on making a cut on that bid, winning a spot on soup or you know, some other contract. You know, if you obviously get it and you've had a past performance to back it up, you know, the case study, Zowie, you're home.
Right.
Well, and a lot of content is developed through the marketing side of the house, but we actually work with business development groups at different contractor sites because they're chasing really big opportunities. You know, they're chasing them 18 to 24 months out. And we're helping them develop content specific to that procurement, specific to that organization that's going to be letting the RFP. And they use it as part of their capture process. So a little bit different twist on content, but still valuable in terms of helping to win that bid.
Yeah, I just did a TCO template for one of my business development managers, and we're testing it to see how that's going to work, where he's talking to the customer about them implementing our solution, and 6 months down the road, what does it look like at this point, right, from a savings perspective. And they'll when they come to you and they want your help, that's the sign that you're working well with your sales organization, mm-hmm. and that they're leading the charge in, hey, what do you think about this idea? And if you go with it, more than likely you're going to be successful, like you said, because they're out there going after the big fish and they're the ones, you know, bringing home those large deals. So they have a lot to say.
Yeah. One of the high points for me, and I only sat in one or two, but knowing that Max Peterson, VP of Federal Sales at CDW, wanted you in particular at his sales meetings to make sure his field sales folks and his telephone jockeys knew the marketing materials that were available to them,
right,
was a huge part of the growth of that organization over the 3 years and beyond that I played with you.
Right. And, you know, that came into play even the job before that when I was at Unisys, and we sat in the sales organization. I was not in the marketing org. And I had to do the same thing sales had to do and deliver on my goals in order for us to make club, and we were eligible. So if you're not hand in hand with your sales organization and you're not listening to what they're encountering in the field with their customers, you're not doing yourself a service, right? And you're not doing them a service mm-hmm. either.
Yeah. And Lisa, to your point, BD's right there with it. So mm-hmm. if your sale, and this is the Fred Diamond message, right? If your sales and marketing are not aligned, you're wasting a lot of money.
That's yeah, right. You're not getting the leverage that you could be.
So, what about the features of the content? We've talked about the types, but what does the content actually have to do?
Yeah, we've touched on it a little bit, but from the federal side, federal decision makers during that buying process, and Lisa mentioned it, they're looking for details. They want to understand the details of your solution, the details of your product. They want meat. They're still in that information gathering stage. So that was at the top of their list. Second on the list was data and research to support the contractor's position, and then past performance and case studies. So those were the top three kind of features of what they're looking for in content. Now you look at the contractor responses, and it looks a little bit different. Number one on their list was insights from government thought leaders. That did not show up high on the Fed's side. And I think they are looking for outside validation. They want to understand what's going on in a commercial environment. They're looking for a breadth of examples and ideas. They don't want to just hear from a government leader on the inside. So I think that's probably why that scored lower on the Fed side. Contractors also had past performance, case studies on their list, and data and research to support the position. So not a ton of discrepancies between the two groups on that question, except for that insights from government thought leaders. Feds did not think it was as important as contractors did.
Agree. And your thought leader can actually be delivering some of those data points, but coming specifically from you versus that third party is just not as trusted as what would be if you got someone else to validate your position.
Yeah. When I'm trying to help somebody build a thought leader position, subject matter expert platform, individual or small company, one of the things I do is to make sure that the media knows who they are and the narrow focus of that. So if the topic comes up, the likelihood is higher that they may be interviewed for that piece. So that's where I really want them to stand out. Generate content, yes, but that third-party validation, if you're in the story, you are the expert.
Right.
Right. And once we published an op-ed, right, with one of our SMEs, that led to a TV interview, right, on Government Matters, and then they were invited back. So you can't get any better than that when it comes to them relying on your...
You mean my old producer's show?
Your...
Yes.
You know, your person is valid to them and is the right SME to be on the program. So you just got to... You got to dig and you got to push and you got to get them out there. And sometimes it's hard to get your SMEs involved because they're busy. Everybody's busy. But once you do and once they're heard, you know, it's nice to get those repeats.
I think they're busy, and sometimes what we've seen is they're a little skeptical of the process.
Right.
And then once they go through it, they understand the value and that you've won them. You've won them over.
There you go. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Lisa DeLuca and Lisa DeZutti right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. My conversation today with Lisa DeLuca of Veritas and Lisa DeZutti of Market Connections. The topic is content, and we're going to go now to the most effective delivery channels for your content. And DeZutti, start us
I'll
off.
I'll start with what the survey told us. Topping the list for federal decision makers in terms of most effective delivery methods or channels, search engines was number one on the list. Probably would have been the answer for all of us. Followed by corporate websites. Email was next. Fourth was government-focused online communities. And fifth were news websites focused on federal-related content. So those were the top five. Didn't see big differences when you ask contractors the same question around those top five, generally very much the same. I think surprising to some people when they looked at this slide at our event a few weeks ago, we also asked about things like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, SlideShare. Those came in much lower on the list, but I really think that when federal decision makers are answering this question, they don't think about getting their content there. Those are things that drive them to a contractor's website. So just because they were lower on the list for this particular study doesn't mean they're not valuable. They're valuable in driving decision makers to your website. So I think you have to look at them more as a vehicle rather than a place to house content necessarily.
Right. And the one that topped your list, YouTube, obviously that's one you host your content in, right? And that's where you can actually take them directly to, or you can push them through your website too.
Yeah.
So I agree with these. And I think what's really interesting is if you ask me, I've had instances where I've had to actually Google the content on my site to get to it versus searching on the site. And that seemed to be faster. So you can't underestimate the value of search engine, and you have to have a strategy there around key search words first and foremost, plus then, you know, how do you get your content to float to the top, obviously, over your competitors when they're talking about specific topics. So you have to have a strategy to all your content. You can't just, you know, post it and hope they come. You got to do something about it. So
also interesting to me as I looked over the data is that, you know, corporate websites did pop up to the top. And right. I think there are so many different channels that we're all inundated with and trying to keep up with. I think maybe in the past year or two, contractors have perhaps neglected a little bit their website and keeping it up to date. So it's,
but again, those that have not ignored that.
Yes.
You know, I use Carahsoft and MX Group in particular as prime examples of how to keep your site robust.
You've got to keep the pressure on to keep your site robust. And then my other comment here is, and you touched on it a little bit, Lisa, is don't make your content too hard to find.
Right.
We're producing content for clients, and sometimes I like to go see what they're doing with it, where is it. It's so hard to find on their website. I'm like, if I can't find it and I'm looking, I know what I'm looking for. So just make it easy to find.
That's always been number one in my advice for websites since day one. You know, don't bury it.
Yeah,
but
it's hard. It's hard to keep up with the content on your website, and it's hard to not leverage third party and just leverage third party.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to do both, and you need to make sure if they hear your name associated with something, they better be able to find it on your website.
Right. Right.
Okay. So. Did we really kind of discuss delivery there or not?
Yeah, I think that, you know, and Lisa touched on it. We asked about asked contractors about what delivery mechanisms they're using. Search engine was top of the list. I mean, it was right. Number one on their list. They're still using traditional online banner ads. Social ads are being used, and it begins to fall off after that. Promoted posts, promoted tweets, that sort of thing. Native advertising. Had a very small percentage, only 7% of contractors said that they're not using any kind of digital advertising strategy.
Right. And so. I think too, you know, when you look at where the Govies are going and how they're leveraging content, you as a marketer need to also go where they're going from a topical perspective. So what are the email newsletters that are relevant to your offerings? And then what does the readership look like for those? Because that's immediately relevant, right? And the relevant being the word these days, right, to get to people. You can't ignore that that's tops on their list. One of the top things on their list is getting email newsletters.
Yeah. And they will look at sponsored content, you know, that's on traditional news media websites. So that's also something to keep in mind.
Traditional news media websites are smart enough not to put up, you know, really stupid stuff.
Hopefully.
But, you know, I guess if the money's right, some of them might. Certainly not Federal News Radio, though.
Of course not.
paid versus organic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both.
You got to do both.
Both important. Both critical. Paid, you want to make sure you're getting the biggest bang for your buck. Mm-hmm. And that means, you know, where do you sit in relationship to your competitors? Obviously, you want to be first. And then organic, just like Lisa said, you got to make it easy to get to where they want to be and what they're looking for that you have available.
Yeah, I think paid, and you even said it, Lisa, when we were chatting about this a couple of days ago, it's a necessary evil. It's a necessary tool. I mean, there's so much clutter out there, you know, or I think organic reach is dwindling a little bit, and you have to use paid social media as a tool in your tool bag. We didn't ask about it on this survey, but there's commercial research that shows probably about 60% of marketers agree that paid social media is more effective than organic. But I do believe that organic has its place. It's a way to build community. It's a way to build relationships. So you do have to have both.
Agree.
Go to back to FedTech for a second. Every year they come out with their top 100 federal IT blogs, and top 50, I guess.
Yeah.
And I always promote the heck out of that because it's such a valuable third-party kind of view of the unit. I mean, it's a little subjective, but it's got some really great stuff there that I just don't think about regularly, including the CIO.gov blog, things like that. So,
yeah, blogs vary, and blog trust in terms of content varies widely. That's more subjective of the reader than actually, you know, coming out with something validated third party, you know, research. And so they have their place, like you said, and you want to make sure what you are posting out there has some shelf life to it.
And of value interest. To the
exactly.
reader.
And yeah. relevant, again, same word. Right. And then you'd be more successful.
Yeah, but you know, the value of a blog is never immediately apparent. You really have to become, as you just implied, a trusted source. Then you're going to get some regular readership.
Right.
If you're not publishing regularly and you come out with rants occasionally, you're less likely to build that momentum. Final question though is did you want to say something there?
No.
Okay.
Just thinking about rants.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Well, I do some.
I know.
but I gotta.
It wouldn't be as much fun if you didn't.
I am the market ranter, or the marketing market ranter. Final question though, gated versus ungated, and when, if to gate.
Yeah, I may feel differently than the majority on this, but I believe in gating content. And it's probably because we work so hard to create our content, and it's a lot of effort to put the research together, and there's value in it. So we gate almost all of our content. We may that's true. I'm thinking about the research that we do.
Yeah.
If you want to download a research report, that's going to be gated.
Yes.
So as long as that type of content has value to it and you're delivering value, I think you're fine to gate. And as a receiver of that, when I have to put in my information to download something, I'm fine with it as long as what I get has value to me. There's nothing that annoys me more, though, when I have to put in my information and I get a piece of crap out of it. So.
And you just hit the nail on the head with that one, because I think, you know, if you're not offering something unique, right, in the case of a research study, it could be the only one of its kind, right? And that's something unique. That right. can be gated.
I don't know of another federal content marketing study.
Yeah. Period. And if you don't have something unique, you're doing yourself a little bit of a disservice by not keeping it ungated, right? You want them to build up as much information about you as possible. Gating almost everything. In Lisa's world, that may work. She's a researcher. Her stuff is that kind of value. But if you're gating an ebook, or you're gating a video, right, or you're gating a demo or a trial, you know, those things can have value in terms of gating. But as much free that you can offer, that customers are going to remember you for that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Quick story. Back in the early days of government marketing best practices, I get a call from somebody in Richmond saying, you're not going to believe this, but the Ostabu at VA is standing on stage holding your book up saying, I don't know who this guy is, but got to get this book. Well, it was Scott Dennison. I called him after I sold him books at cost so he could hand them out at VA centers around the country through their small business office. You know, I had distribution of probably 4,000 or so books that way. And it was, you know, some of the best advertising I could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can't underestimate word of mouth, right? And mm-hmm. that gets around, and
Absolutely.
People remember
yep.
those where they got that valuable information from.
Yep.
And they'll go back.
Yep. And that's the point of content, mm-hmm. building that trust, because that's going to be the basis of the relationship that'll give you traction.
And we ungate pieces of content. We'll put, mm-hmm. you know, snippets up in our LinkedIn group, or we'll put it on our blog, to your point,
Mark.
Yeah,
you'll take a slide out and talk
absolutely.
About it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, drive
mm-hmm.
them to the gated
right.
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go. Guys, thanks so much for coming in. I truly appreciate it. And Ms. DeLuca, you will be back.
I will be back.
There you go. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government, including the content side. I don't create content for most of my clients. I've done it on rare occasion, but taking my attitude out of the writing is a difficult process, so you'll pay a lot. But I advise on, you know, freelancers and agencies to work with. We're actually doing an agency review involving one of your partners.
Wonderful.
So if you need help on this, give me a call, drop me a line, markamtower@gmail.com. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.